Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and that was a longer howl than usual because I had some time to rest. It's now New Year's, and you got your New Year's resolutions on. You're going to walk that dog more. You're going to brush that cat more. You're going to play with the cat more. You're going to entertain the dog more. You're going to teach it a new trick. You're going to get fit yourself. Oh, yeah, you're motivated. Maybe you even decided to feed your dog better. Did you decide that? Have you ever looked at the dog food bag you're buying or the cans or the whatever it is and thought, I wonder if it's true what it says on this label? I wonder, you know, it says all natural. It says best. It says premium. Is this really the best I can do? Or is this a ripoff? Is there something cheaper that's better? I am very confused by the pet foods, where they're made, how they're made, all that. So we've asked Dave. Dave'sPetFood.com, if you want to look him up. We've asked Dave from Dave Pet City, Dave's Pet City, to come on and tell us all about it. Explain to us how this whole pet food thing works. Welcome to the show again, Dave.
Oh, hello there. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year. Did you make a resolution?
No.
No?
No.
Well, you're probably already feeding your pets well. Some of us cheat a little bit. We buy the cheapest kibble, I'm talking about myself, and then add all kinds of extra stuff in, and I think, okay, good. I gave them eggs, I gave them cheese, I gave them meat, I gave them veggies, they're good, but maybe I could be doing better. And how do I know if the kibble I'm buying really is what it says it is?
Right. Well, you know, these are very interesting questions because we are coming out with a couple of new SKUs. And the SKUs are being, the cans are being made in New Jersey, and the company that makes the cans will not let me put Made in the USA on the cans. And let me explain to the listeners, because I think this is fascinating. In its typical fashion, the feds do not have a strict enforcement of what is correct and what isn't. The letter of the law says if you say any product, people food, dog food, whatever, is made in the USA, then theoretically 100% of what's in that can should come from the USA. But they don't enforce that. So, for example, there are no vitamins. The vitamin packs that all pet food has, there are none that come from the USA. And there aren't
what?
Because, this is true, yeah, there are not because God didn't put any of those trace elements in the USA. It's like God put oil in Saudi Arabia, right? There's no oil in Massachusetts.
Kind of makes you wonder, though. He certainly, God did put wolves, canines, foxes, and coyotes in the USA.
They're doing just fine. the point is, the feds have not regulated that, so some companies can say put in Made in USA. They're really breaking the law, but no one is enforcing it. So,
So now they're trying to clean that up.
Now fine, which is a good thing.
It's
a good thing as long as everybody is on the same page, and you don't go into a store and see one brand that says, well, this one's made in the USA, and the other one's not made in the USA, so I'm going to buy this one, when in fact, they're both sourced from the USA, but the vitamins don't come from USA.
I was having problems with the whole China thing. See, here in Canada, it'll say made in Canada because it happens to be repackaged in Canada, but it actually came from China.
Correct.
And that's a huge worry.
Correct.
I mean, how do you know? You don't
Correct.
Want to import melamine
yep.
poisoning into your yep. dog food. So now you're saying
you can't even find
made in America because it won't say made in America on it?
I think it's a good thing because, as I'm told, as companies repackage or bring out new SKUs, everybody's going to have to adhere to the same law. So for example...
Okay, but then everything will say not made in America because everything has a vitamin from somewhere else, right?
Correct. Or let's say it's got lamb in it. Well, there is no lamb in America or Canada. Lamb comes from New Zealand or Australia. So...
See, what a weird thing to say. Right. What a weird thing to say as I drive by sheep and lambs every day. Like, why is that? That's crazy.
Right. Well, so I said to the manufacturer, I said, well, can I put nothing in here is from China? And they said, yeah, we think you can get away with that.
Oh, interesting.
Right.
Oh, that's very good. That's a very good label. Because that's what my pet people, my listeners, my customers, the people I know, that's what they're looking for. They want to know it didn't come from China.
Yep.
Exactly.
Right. So, one of the other things that I think it's important for people to think, in the whole country of the USA, there's about 5 plants that make canned pet food. So I don't care if you use Blue Buffalo, Wellpet, From, Dave's, Taste of the Wild, none of these companies own their own canning plants. They all
see that was the thing during the pet food scare. Was it the 80s when it was like a couple of warehouses, but it hit the mall, right?
It was in 2000, yeah.
Oh, it was more recently than that. It was in the year 2000. Yeah, and it was like, it was Jameson's, it was Procter & Gamble, it was IAMS.
It was everybody.
But it was like across the board, right?
It was across the board because they all used one plant. They didn't own their own plants. P&G they're out of the pet food business now, but they did not manufacture their own food. They all used a specific manufacturer. So how it works is a guy like me or someone like Blue Buffalo or Wellpet or whoever goes to a one of the manufacturers and says, here's the formulation I want. Have your nutritionists make it up for me because they all have nutritionists. Here's what I'm looking for. Here's the price point I want to be at. So a cannery might make, 300 or 400 different formulas for different customers. It's not that it's all the same stuff, but the economics of running a cannery is that cannery's got to run 24 hours a day.
I understand. And it makes sense using the same facilities if they're certified and inspected.
Exactly.
And kept clean.
I certainly would not. Right. Yeah. I mean, none of us by ourselves has enough volume to keep the cannery going the whole time. So I think that it's a good thing if... So this is how convoluted it's just going to get. I understand that California is now saying, we don't care what the feds say. As long as 95% of the product comes from the U.S., you can put made in the U.S. on it.
So that seems like a sensible decision, except that if the 5% is really toxic, we're in trouble again.
Well, this is not to do with toxic. It's more of, I think, truth in advertising. That's what I think. So as long as everybody's all the brands are on the same page, and they say, you can put in here nothing from China or whatever, you can make those exclusions.
Okay, you know what? We're going to go to break and we're going to come back and talk more about this, because what does this mean for you when you're shopping for pet food? We're going to talk about that next with Dave. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Buzz Pet Talk Radio. Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And we were diverging a little bit, digressing, talking about German Shepherds, because Dave has a couple. And I had one named Tao here last week, who kept picking up a big giant log and then running around all the little labs and goldens and kind of bashing into them as if he didn't know the length of the log. Of course he knew, but he's a herder. He knows where everything is.
Right.
But yeah, so we were talking about food and what can people do? Okay, so things aren't labeled properly. In California, maybe they're getting a handle on it. We can't exactly look for made in America. Some labels may say nothing, you know, not from China. What else, what can you tell
people?
Well,
so here's the deal. Any food that if someone goes into an independent pet store is going to be safe. I don't care what brand it is. There is no food that's made in China that anyone brings into the country. That's all gone. There's nothing. So what I don't want people to do is, if you pick up a food, and it's especially true with cat food, some of the best cat food, for example, comes from Thailand because that's where they make fish. Not where they make fish, but that's where tuna,
right,
the sea and all that kind of stuff, they're all made in Thailand. So they're not dummies. They took the tuna that doesn't, the Charlie the tuna wouldn't be good enough to go in chicken of the sea, so they use it in cat food. So some of the best cat food brands like Waruva or Dave's or Solid Gold, Tiki Cat, all those, they're all made in Thailand. So I don't want consumers to get nervous. I'm not going to buy these because they're not made in the USA.
Right.
Because they're great food. So that should not scare you. I think that out of all the recalls that happened, the good news is that the manufacturers and the brands are so paranoid that something is going to happen. Excuse me. They went overboard to make sure that everything is good.
Okay, so you started that by saying independent pet stores.
Yep.
Can you explain to me, I mean, is it just boutiques? Are the chains not included in that? What about supermarkets? Like, what are you talking about?
So when I say an independent pet store, it's boutiques, it's farm and garden stores, it's places that, you know, some of the regional chain stores. It's really anywhere that you can walk in and talk to someone who knows the products in their stores. Does that make sense?
Well, kind of. I don't know. I mean, in previous calls, I've had a veterinarian who was really against the big box stores, the ones that are big box supermarkets or the big box pet supply stores. And I'm not sure which side of that you're on with this.
Well, as a retailer, they're competitors of mine, so I don't want to send people there. I'm a small business person. I love people to support independent businesses. I don't understand why, on the other hand, I don't understand why the veterinarian says that, because I sell Blue Buffalo, Natural Balance, and so does Petco and PetSmart. So
I think it was about
the
level.
Stuff that I sell is good, and the stuff they sell is bad. So I'm a little
I think it was about the level of expertise and advice you could expect
from
the people.
Right. So you're
I think that's what it was.
Yes, I have a cold. That's why I'm coughing. You're always going to get better advice and stuff in an independent store. And an independent store isn't going to carry garbage, period. They just don't do it.
So you can't make a bad choice.
You can't make a bad choice, right.
Yeah, that's reassuring.
Right, right. And that's the biggest thing. But, I don't want, you know, folks to get scared. And it's especially true with cat food, is to pick up a can of, you know, tuna and chicken and see that it's made in Thailand. Thailand is not China. Thailand is Thailand. And that's where if you go get a can of good tuna in the grocery store, you're going to notice that, guess what, it comes from Thailand. So I don't want people to get nervous about it, because that happens a lot.
Yeah, no, I can imagine it would. It's pretty scary times. You know, most of my customers will no longer use anything jerky at all whatsoever. And they miss it. You know, it's a really good training treat.
Buy
a tiny little amount.
For example,
you can
my
get
dog, chicken jerky. There's tons of made in the USA chicken jerky now. tons
People
of it.
are afraid. They're afraid to trust it. And,
We've
you
never
know,
had
it's
any
such a
problems.
good treat for training purposes
Oh, it's
because
a great treat. It's the
a
best treat in the world.
thumbnail-sized piece, and you can get your dog to do a few tricks for that. You know, maybe one trick when he's learning it, and then after it becomes review, get him to do it 3 or 4 times. And when he's really doing it, nailing it well and fast and responsively, then you give him that little treat. So but they'll work hard for it. It's also good because it keeps, and it can be used for tracking and things like that. You could place it places. I mean, it's a good treat.
Plus
Too
the
bad we're
fact,
all scared to buy it. So
the more you get your dog
so
fast,
you're saying people
there's
just
tons.
look for, what do they
Made in
look for if they
USA.
want to buy jerky?
Made in USA. Chicken jerk. There's chick, and it's mostly chicken jerky, but in my stores, we must have 6 different brands of Made in USA chicken jerky. We've
Nice.
never had a problem. There's another brand of treats that I use called Real Meat. There's venison, there's salmon, there's a whole bunch of other ones. I like treats that don't have any carbs.
Oh, yeah, for sure, especially since so many dogs are overweight.
Right. And then there's a fabulous brand, which I happen to know the person who owns it, called I'd Rather Be With My Dog dog treats. It's the first paleo dog
Nice.
treats on the market.
What does
So
that mean?
paleo is the caveman diet. So there's no dairy, there's no grains, there's nothing artificial. It's completely, really and truly completely natural because you can't have anything synthetic in it. So that was what the cavemen would eat. That's what that they called it, the paleo. And those are fabulous semi-moist treats. You can find them in a lot of independent stores. You can go to the website, I'd rather be with my dog.net.
Is there something you would tell people to avoid, a product or a food that you just say, don't even go there? I mean, I've heard a lot of people not really
I don't
want people to steer
rawhide.
clear of rawhide. Is that what you're going to say,
Rawhide.
rawhide?
Rawhide. I get so nervous. I tell people don't give your dog rawhide, and don't leave your dog alone with toys with squeaky things in them.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that too. Because your dog's instinct, most dogs' instinct, is to gut that toy and find the squeaky. And in the process of doing that, they ingest things they're not supposed to swallow that can get stuck in their stomach. And I'm telling you from personal experience, it costs between $1,100 and $1,400 to get a fibrous mass removed from a stomach that was put there by a dog eating a toy. So, yeah, don't do it. It's way too expensive, way too difficult, and your dog can actually die from eating that inner, the stuffing and the strings. What about the rope bones? Do you find those are dangerous at all?
You know, it's interesting. It's funny because we have, in all my years, we've never had an issue. I've never had a customer come to me and say, we had a health issue with the rope bone. Never. And you never read about them online. You know what I mean? So I
You
guess
know
those
what? I
don't
agree
count.
with that. And I do see ropes, little rope strings and strands in the poops at Camp Good Dog. So I do see them passing, but I never see a problem. Well, thank you for joining us today. We've run out of time and we've got Josh up for our next segment. So we're going to say goodbye to Dave. Thank you. Do you want to send people to your website and your stores one last time before we go?
Yeah, it's daveradner.com. And for the treats, go to I'd rather be with my dog.net.
Nice. Well, I hope you'll come back and join us
Thanks.
again. You always
Thanks.
learn something when you come on.
Have fun. Talk to you. Bye,
Okay, thanks
everybody.
very much. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We're coming up next with Stajax, and I will tell you what that's all about. And we'll be talking with Josh. So stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. You are listening to Deb Wolf. Yes, that's me. DebWolf.ca or DeborahWolfOnline.com. That's me, Deb Wolf.
I'm your doggy,
I'm your doggy,
and I love you,
and I love you,
and you know that
you know
I really do.
I really
do. Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk with me, Deb Wolf, and you can find me at DebWolf.com. .ca and DebWolf.net and DeborahWolfOnline.com, all those places. You could also look at my 8 puppies, 6 are sold, two still unspoken for, but they're all still here. And we've got some great footage of them with their first meal and then their first play in snow. And now they're just adorable. There's eight of them. They're standard poodles. Half of them are red and half of them are apricot, and seven girls, one boy. But don't worry, he holds his own. And you can look at them on our Facebook site, Camp Good Dog. That's my boarding kennel. So we were just talking, and it seems like, I don't know, this is like unheard of. It is sunny here in the rainforest, and I'm about to talk with somebody in L.A., that's right, who says it's actually raining in L.A. So that makes me feel really good. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Nice to have you. So you're here with Stajax. How did you come up with Stajax?
Well, it came out of necessity, really. My wife and I would go hiking with our pup pretty much every day, and at the time I had a really nice car, and to get to the hiking trails near me, it's windy road and narrow streets, and so I'd watch in my rear view mirror as Jackson, our puppy, would strain his legs, or you know, no matter how slow I tried to go, he was kind of stressed out, and that stressed me out. And so no matter how hard I tried, it was inevitable. And so he would just go from side to side in the car. And then in addition to that, after the hike, he would return, and he'd get dirty and muddy, and as I think as a good dog should, dirty and muddy. But it just destroyed my back seat. So I tried everything under the sun, from towels to the hammocks that go in the back seat to the other seat covers that are on the market, and for one reason or another, they didn't really work. So I set out to make something myself that I thought was versatile and easy to install and easy to clean and kept him stable. And so that's where it came from.
Oh, I see these dogs when I'm driving, because with the way the light shines through, you can see them swaying in the car in front of you. And they're going to the right, and they're going to the left, and they're going to the right. And the owner doesn't realize that the dog is getting an extreme workout the whole time they're driving. It's not, he's not lying down. He's not relaxed. Like, that's hard on him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can look into other cars, and you see them just gripped into the seat with that kind of amusement park-like feel to their face, like getting that adrenaline rush of how hard they're working just to try to stay still.
And it's one thing if your dog is, you know, one-year-old, two-year-old, Weimaraner, Wiesla, he's probably not going to stay still anyway, Border Collie, hurting the oncoming traffic. But when you have like a seven-year-old lab in the mix, or a 10-year-old, or a little tiny dog, I mean, they're getting beat up in there. They're getting knocked around.
You
so that's
not
fair. You
just want them to be comfortable. Is that so much to ask, really?
Okay. So I've seen lots of this stuff. You named some of the stuff. I mean, because I run Camp Good Dog. We have a shuttle van that does door-to-door. And over the years, I've been running it since before the year 2000. So over the years, we've had all kinds of things I've made, you know, wooden inserts and plastic inserts, tarps, mats, everything you could think of. No matter what you do, eventually your car stinks like moldy wet dog. So does yours solve that?
Well, what ours does is the mat is made in such a way that it really absorbs the wetness and the dog smell, I guess you could say. And it's so easy to clean, and you can throw it in and out so quickly that I think my car smells amazing right now. And hopefully that's because of Stajax, but I can't guarantee that that's the reason. But we made it in such a way that it's so easy to clean that anyone can really do it, and it'll stay clean day in, day out without much trouble.
You see, because up until now, my problem often is if it's sturdy, it's heavy. So you're saying this isn't heavy, but it stands up okay?
Yeah, it's not heavy at all. You know, we spent about a year and a half in different templates really trying to get the perfect mix of what I thought was heavy duty enough that it could withstand really any dog's claws, but at the same time is light enough that you can throw it in and out, and it's really easy to be taken in and out of the car or thrown into a washing machine or anything like that. So, yeah, Stajax is really lightweight, really, really lightweight, similar to if you were carrying a yoga mat around under your arm. It's almost the exact same weight as that, but creates extreme stability for their paws.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, that I could do. I do that all the time. What about the quick installation? I know you say it's quick installation. Sometimes when things say quick installation or point and click, it's not that, right? It's not quick installation. IKEA furniture for me is a headache and a half. Is
they
this
say
quick?
That they make it easy, but no.
Do I need special tools and all kinds of stuff for this?
There are no tools. It comes packaged, rolled up, and you literally unroll it. It clicks in through the seatbelt openings, and it's large enough for any car seat to put the seatbelt through, either the single or the double seatbelt. And the buckle goes straight through the mat, and that's what locks it in. We have four different mats, so we've kept them separate for the ease of installation. We have the bottom part and the back part of both the front seat and the back seat. And so the back seat locks in through the seat belts, and all of the others are adjustable, really easy adjustable straps. So you don't need any tools. You don't need anything like that. We say quick installation. I clocked myself doing my back seat for Jackson at 30 seconds. I timed my dad, who has a little bit slower hands and is a little bit slower than me, but I clocked him at 50 seconds. So he doesn't have a dog, and he tried.
Okay.
Because
you know you get quick at anything you do every day, putting on your own shoes, driving your own car. I mean, everything gets easy, but it's good to clock a novice, non-dog owner, first time.
Yeah,
that makes sense. That's not bad.
Less than a minute.
Okay. So if you had more than one dog, would you buy more than one?
Well, it depends. I think if you have more than one dog, but they're both in the same place, so preferably in the back seat, then no, you just need the one for the seat. If you have a smaller dog and a larger dog, some dogs I know go in the passenger seat. Jackson, my dog, does not. But if they go in the passenger seat, then you could get one for either the single seat or the pilot seats, and then one for the back seat, just depending on where your dogs really like to settle down in the car. You just need one.
So where can people go to take a look at this and order it?
To order it, I mean, we have about 10 boutiques in L.A. that we're in and two in Canada. But the most preferable way is to go to our website at stayjax.com, stayjax.com. And you can check everything out there.
I love the name. Stay, Jax, stay. So, yeah, that's just great. So I know Jackson, your dog, is a rescue. Did that have anything to do with this?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how much Jackson has really impacted my wife and I's life in such a good way. Really, not even because of the product, but just, you know, we rescued him when he was 8 weeks old. We had him. He's an Australian Shepherd mix. And he's just so loyal and
smart
and
peppy and intuitive.
Oh, yeah. And he's really, you know, he's made my wife and I so much more adventurous because he just has to be out and exploring. And him being a rescue has just changed, I think, where the company's going. And because of him, we strive to give back to organizations that do rescue or work with animals. Right now, we work closely with Much Love Animal Rescue, Ridgeback and Friends here in Los Angeles, and Barks of Love down in Orange County here in Southern California. And we also do events with NKLA, which is a huge no-kill shelter in Los Angeles, and Best Friends Animal Society. And so we try to give a percentage of all of our sales back to rescue organizations so that they can keep doing the work that allowed us to get Jackson, and so other people can get a rescue dog that they love as well and just really be able to help them as much as possible.
You know, way back in my career, I made my book available to the local pounds and shelters here so that instead of a store getting a nice big juicy cut off every sale, the pound did, or the shelter did. And you could probably do that. So make them your retailers. Do you know what I mean?
That's a great idea.
That's what I did with my book and my DVD, and I still do that because, you know what, everybody who adopts a dog out of a shelter needs to train it. If they buy my DVD, that gives $10 to the shelter. That's pretty good. You know, they didn't have to do anything for that. And what do I care if it goes to them or a store? Well, I do care. I'd rather it go to them. So, you know.
So much more so.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm so glad you came on the show today. I know we've run out of time. I hope everybody will check out Stay Jax, and I hope Jax will stay. Stay Jax. Stay Jax. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, everyone. Dog lovers, cat lovers, we'll be talking, I think we'll be going on the cat side next. I think so. But don't despair, dog lovers. I'll keep it dog friendly on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
To Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And we've got Dusty Rainbolt. Yes, we do. Welcome to the show, Dusty.
Well, thank you for having me again. I'm always happy to visit with you and your audience.
Well, before we get going, because we always get going and then time runs out, why don't you tell them where they can find you, where they can reach you, all that sort of stuff. If you're looking for anything, I hope it's not more soiling mistakes, cats peeing and pooing in the wrong place, but it might be. Please tell us, what are you looking for?
As a matter of fact, I am looking for and pooping in the wrong place. That will be going on for another month or so.
Okay.
But, people can find me at DustyCatWriter.com. That's my website. I'm on Facebook as Dusty Rainbolt. And you can read my books, Cat Wrangling Made Easy and Kittens for Dummies. And if you like fiction, there's Death Under the Crescent Moon.
Well, Dusty, I have a story for you. I have a customer with a very old cat, just has other cats, but all the cats seem to get along, had many litter boxes, and all of a sudden the cat started to urinate and defecate on the teenage boy's bed. Nice.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
we
but you know what?
I
took your advice. Because I thought I was going to be reaching you before this, and I kept meaning to ask you. And then in the meantime, I just told them what to do. And I suggested that because the cat was so old, I suggested they make a vet appointment and that they also try, at least for a time, just a plain rectangular shaped litter box, no lid, no gizmos, because they have a few contraptions. Mm-hmm. They have the self-cleaning one and a bunch of things. I said, just a plain box, no lid, nothing, mm-hmm. in a plain area. And they said that's all it took. By the time the vet appointment came, the cat was back using the box. They think she was afraid of the lid. Now, they wanted me to ask you, though, why would she all of a sudden, at whatever age, 13, 14, randomly become unable to use cat boxes with lids when she always went into the same boxes all her life?
Well, they probably should go ahead and take her to the vet anyway.
Should they? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. My guess would be that she, the lids, the hoods, are generally a little bit higher than the area without the lid, the boxes without the lids. And so if she's that old, she's probably experiencing arthritic pain. And so once you take the lid off, it might be a couple inches shorter. So
To jump. Okay. So it's not so much a fear of getting into the dark space. See, I thought it might be a vision thing. Because I once had a cat who was afraid to go in the dark all of a sudden, which to me seemed crazy because they could almost see in the dark. But as soon as I had an automatic nightlight in there, she was okay again. Isn't that odd?
Most cats, no cat can see in the absolute dark.
No, it wasn't absolute. I mean, I could see in there, so I thought she could see in there, right? It wasn't absolute.
But what happens is people hear, oh, cats can see in the dark, so they expect that they can go into the closet in the unlit utility room. And that's not true because they're afraid, oh, well, you know, there might be a coyote there waiting for them. They can't see it. They don't know. So they can see in low light, but they cannot see in no light. So, yes, that's a possibility, too. But I wouldn't think that the hood would take that much of the light away. I'm guessing it's probably a pain issue. So they probably want to take the kitty to the vet and see if she is experiencing arthritis.
Now, okay, I want to ask you, since we're talking about this anyway, and it so often comes up, what is the situation with crystals in the urine? Can it be avoided with diet?
It yes, most of them are controlled by diet, and that's another issue where they need to talk to the vet. There are several different types of crystals, so the type of the crystal would dictate what kind of diet you would put them on, and it wouldn't be a good thing. I mean, if you have multiple cats, you probably need to feed them separately.
And you know what? There's a lot of gadgets out there now that I'm pretty amazed with for things like that, right? Like, you don't have to now have to catch your cat and find him and feed him, because there's things that are automatic but triggered by the collar. You know, there's some really, really clever things out there now.
I agree, but, you know, I think part of the bonding, part of the reason the cats love us is because we feed them, and it's something they look forward to. And so I like the idea that my cats associate me with the food, because once you do that, then it's like, well, I get fed, so, you know, why do I need to hang with you? I don't have to.
Oh, that's true.
The machine is going to feed me. But, you know, if you have a weird schedule or you're gone a lot, then those are fabulous. And I'm sure the kitty looks forward to that particular time of day, because they have an internal clock that is phenomenal.
Is there something you've learned about cats in the last little while that really surprised you that you could share with us?
Well, I think we've already talked about it. I was shocked to find out that cats couldn't see and know light. I made the same assumptions everybody else did. Let's see.
The thing about their spine surprised me. The thing about ESP in the last few years that they found the gland, that surprised me. There's been a few things lately with cats that really, really surprised me. About 20 years ago, I was surprised to learn that cat declawing was like amputation, and yet it was still being done. You know, that was sort of shocking to me. But I'm trying to think, like, the...
Something along that line, yes, something that surprised me. I was reading a study, and it was talking about human amputation. And a lot of people don't think it's that big a deal. You know, it's okay. Well, as it turns out, in virtually every case of human amputation, we know there are phantom pains. And so that means that you have 10 amputations when you're declawing a cat. And so you have 10 opportunities for phantom pain. And I find, you know, I just recently learned that, and I find that very disturbing.
The thing about cat declawing, I mean, besides the fact that it's not necessary, it doesn't actually improve the situation. The cats who get declawed are not less aggressive. They bite instead. And they're not more likely to behave in the house. If they were scratching something, they end up a lot of times having litter problems. And the reason I can say that is because if it worked, you wouldn't see them in the shelters. Mm-hmm. But they're overrepresented in the shelters.
They really are. And, you know, they don't know exactly why there's the issue with inappropriate elimination. It could be a number of things. But it's suspected that, you know, a lot of vets tell their clients to put the cats on these paper pellets. Well, if you've ever walked in a parking lot barefoot where they've got the big gravel or the rocks, that's just painful as heck to walk on. I mean, and that's if you don't have any cuts on your feet. Imagine having to walk on that when you have amputations, multiple amputations. And no wonder. And also, cats who are declawed have a tendency that they should walk on their toes. The type of walking escapes me, but they walk on their toes. So when you declaw them, that changes the way that they walk, and they are more prone to arthritis.
See, now that reminds me, some of it reminds me a lot of foot binding. You know, those women mm-hmm. who had their feet broken and then bandaged to make them more attractive or smaller, sort of like ear cropping and tail docking, these things that are just so interfering with the animal's function and or the human's function, in the case of where these women couldn't walk very far without pain and they had rot problems. And, you know, it's just, why would we ever do that? It's being sold as a cure for cats who scratch and cats who attack. So, Dusty, if someone has a cat who scratches things and they're being told they should declaw it, or they have a cat who doesn't even do anything, but maybe they're expecting a baby and someone who's completely misguided tells them they should declaw the cat before the baby comes, what would you say to them?
I would exactly what you said. It's misguided. If you want the cat to accept the baby, then you do a little bit of work ahead of time. You start wearing baby powder. You put baby oil on your hands. You
so you make yourself smell like the things that are going to smell like baby.
Exactly.
In other words, whatever you're going to use, you bring the stuff in, the diapers, all that stuff, and don't scold the cat if he goes and sniffs it. That's the point.
That's exactly it. Let the cat explore it. You know, have your friends bring their babies over. If they have toddlers or infants, all the better. You know, let them explore.
And make sure the cat has a great time when they come over. Feed
exactly.
him when they're there. Pet him when they're there. Make sure he thinks babies are cool. No problem.
Give them treats. Oh, my God. Babies mean I get treats. They don't get treats any other time. He gets treats around the babies. And
the same is true for dogs, by the way, people.
Uh-huh.
You got a dog, you might have to put him on leash so he doesn't, you know, jump on the baby, but you make him just think baby means good times.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't want the kitty in the room, but you want to be able to hear the baby, then you could put a screen door on the baby's room. And just, you know, that way you can hear him. The cat can't get in there. He can hear it. I mean, he can see, he can smell, he can hear.
So a cat who's scratching is not acting aggressively. A cat who's scratching needs to do that. That's like a manicure. He needs to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs his claws to escape predators, to function properly, to walk properly, to live a good life. So leave the claws, but they need a cat scratch. And the thing that I see most, the big mistake I see, is the cat scratch and the litter box together in the basement, way away from where everybody is. So what would you tell people about their cat scratches? Can you give them an idea of, you know, how big, how tall, what kind, where to put it, all that sort of stuff? If you've got a scratching cat, don't declaw the cat. Instead, listen to Dusty.
Well, first of all, let's make scratching the furniture unattractive. You might put some, there are all kinds of products that are repellents. You can put those in the area. You could use orange or lemon plug-ins, like a Febreze. You can use Sticky Paws, which is a fabulous product. It cats don't like sticky things, so if you touch the couch and it's got that sticky stuff on it, they don't like it. Now, another thing you can do is you need to provide something that they want to scratch. People make the huge mistake that they buy these little $5, 1 foot tall scratchers and go, well, the cat doesn't use it.
I know. Cardboard. Little cardboard things. The cat either destroys it or ignores it.
Well, now, the cardboard ones aren't so bad. The ones I'm talking about are the little, the 1.5 foot tall carpeted ones.
Sure.
Think of it as when you go to the gym. If you get on a machine and, you know, you're running, but it's wobbling, you're going to get off of that machine and find something else that doesn't wobble. Nobody wants something that is wobbly. And so if the cat goes to the cat scratcher and it moves, he's going to say, screw that. The couch works better. It doesn't move. So you need something where it's at least tall enough where the cat can dig his claws into it and do a full back stretch, and it doesn't move. And can I mention a brand?
Oh, yeah. But the other thing is, Dusty, location's important too, right?
Well, exactly. You put the good scratcher next to the area where the cat is scratching. You make the target area unattractive, and, you know, you put some catnip on the scratching post or scratching tree, and encourage him, you know, reward him when he does, when he uses it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
what's the brand that you like?
I like the Ultimate Scratcher by Pioneer Pets.
Okay.
It's about 3.5 feet high. It's very solid. I'm looking at one right now, and it's a sisal. It's that rope fabric, and they love it. It feels like bark. You know, if you don't want to spend money, you go buy a log. Cats love logs. I mean, might be kind of messy, but if you can get a log in your house, they can stick their claws in that bark. They love it. And it's cheap.
Well, you know, my cats go in and out. I know that's very controversial. I have cat doors. I also have a unique situation at Camp Good Dog with the big giant fences to keep dogs in, and dogs keep things like coyotes and such out. But still, you know, I have had a cat get hit by a car over the years. I mean, still, I do have problems sometimes. There is a risk to letting them go out. On the other hand, when they go out, they have a full life. They're not obese and bored. But what about, you know, when you make that decision to keep your cat safe and you keep them inside and maybe you only have one, that's when I see the cat problems. So what can people do about that? How can they keep their cats more entertained?
Well, depending on the cat, you might try fostering another cat and see how he does. The trick is you have to introduce them correctly. You can't just put them together and go, oh, they're going to be friends. That's not going to happen. But sometimes if it's a kitten, you put another kitten with them, fabulous. You know, they keep each other company. They stop tearing stuff up because they're chasing each other all over the house. That's wonderful. Other things you can do, you play with them. Play, get their favorite feather on a string out. Play with them before you go to work. Play with them when you get home. A good, a tired cat is a good cat. If the cat is...
I can't believe you said that. I always say that about dogs. A tired dog is a good dog.
Absolutely. I've said that for years, yes.
It's funny, me too.
It's true, because when they get exercise, that releases serotonin. Well, serotonin is the active ingredient in Prozac. And so, you know, it's a natural. That's why people are addicted to running. They love running because it releases serotonin. They feel happy. So if the cat is getting enough exercise, then it's actually chemically helping them, but it's also releasing the stress. So they don't have all that excess energy. You know, let's go tear up the couch. Let's go tear up the, you know, let's go get the toilet paper all over the place. You know,
it's so true. And you see it with children, especially hyper children, but any mm-hmm. children, you know, there's so much calmer after a little bit of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
With me, when I run, I do feel that burst. You know, I'll be running, especially if I'm not running outside with dogs. I love running outside with dogs. But if it's mm-hmm. pouring rain and I'm on some kind of machine and I'm going round and around and around, the first 2 kilometers, so the first, you know, mile or two, I am sort of time watching. And trying to, you know, sort of going, oh, I hope I can get this over with. I hope I can get this over. How much time am I? What am I going to do later? This sort of thing. As soon as I hit about 2, I feel great. I feel mm-hmm. like I wish I could do this all day. Like my mood just completely shifts. I know what that feeling's like, you know. And your dog, your cat, they don't want to be like always needing more. Always feeling like, oh, God, I need to go for a walk. Oh, God, I could use a run. Right? Because that's when they're going to find something to do at home.
And you're not going to like it.
Yeah, like the dog will dig a hole.
If they find something to do on their own, you're not going to like it. But yeah,
you're right. The dog will dig a big giant hole in the backyard. The cat will scratch mm-hmm. the curtains or decide that the living room is an adventure climbing apparatus, you know?
There you go. So give them another thing you can do is give them lots of territory. Clear off, I mean, you don't have to go buy stuff. Clear off a couple of shelves on the bookcase. you know, the top of the china cabinet. Give them
places. What you're telling there, okay, so for people who aren't speaking cat, Dusty, cats are vertical. What she's saying is if you can build a way up to it, then the top shelf of something or the bookcase, if there's a way for your cat to climb up over a chair and onto a table and onto the filing cabinet and then up to the top bookcase, your cat's going to find that way, or you could show them with the toy. But all the things along the top 6 inches of your house that you're probably not using is like premium cat real estate, right?
Absolutely. That's the place where they want to be. So you can do that. And back to the exercise. The cool mm-hmm. thing about cats is these guys are sprinters. They're not long-distance runners. So even if you say, I don't have time to exercise the cat, we're talking 5 to 10 minutes twice a day. We're not talking a huge investment in time. And your cat is going to be so much happier. And the cat, we had a situation here. My husband would come home, and the cats wouldn't pay any attention to him. And he said, they don't pay attention to me. And I work at home, so I had been playing with them, and I'd been feeding them, and I'd been giving them treats. So I stopped doing that.
They didn't need him at all, did they?
Oh, they didn't. No, Daddy. Daddy, I mean.
Who are you? Again, sir? What? Are you sure? You must have the wrong address. No, we're happy.
Let me see some ID. Yeah. But so I stopped interacting except when they asked me to. And when he came home, he would get the bird out, their favorite toy. And, I mean, it was so funny because after about a week of this, you would see them surrounding the front door when they would hear his car 2 blocks away. And when he walked in, they were ready. He only had time to put his stuff down before he started playing with them. And they just loved it. So,
you know, I sometimes like to compare cats and dogs, and what you just said there, where they knew his car coming two blocks away. That's very interesting because lots of dog people report that kind of thing. Dog goes to the door 20 minutes before they come home and this sort of thing. But you don't often get to see when a cat can do what a dog can do because they don't usually want to, right? It's nice to know they can do that. So they can do that, can they?
Well, and they definitely had incentive because they wanted to kill the little bird. And when Daddy got home, they knew they got to kill the bird. So
because
everybody
of these,
had a great time.
Because of the pet shows I do, I get quite a few things in the mail and in the post that are big brown boxes, and I don't know what they are until I open them. And sometimes they're from something like, you know, Kong or Planet Dog or something like this, but it's the cats have made me realize that they are just as good as sniffing out the stuff for them as the dogs are. Because I will get, you know, someone will be thinking they're helping me and they'll load 3 boxes in, and I'll come back and I'll see 3 boxes in my living room. And one of the boxes is shredded. It's like stuff is popping out. It's the catnip box. No, you know, no fooling. They went through, they're like customs dogs when it comes to finding catnip, those cats.
They really are. Shame that that isn't a skill we can translate to other areas.
No, yeah, if catnip was an illegal substance, they would be working the borders, these cats.
Yep,
stoned and happy, confiscating all catnip. Yeah. Oh, well, you know what? I think we've run out of time. I'm glad you joined me today. It's been so great. Oh, no, we've got one more segment coming up. I'm going to close out with a segment. But thank you so much for joining me today, Dusty. I hope you'll come back in the future. I'll bring you some more cat problems. And if people are having their cats going to the bathroom, urinating, defecating, pee-pee and poo-poo, not where they're supposed to, Dusty wants to know. I do not want to know. Dusty wants to know. Okay, so Dusty, where should they send their pee-pee poo-poo problems to?
They can send their stories to dustycatwriter.com, and that's catwriter is W-R-I-T-E-R, not writer.com, and I look forward to hearing from them. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay, thanks, Dusty. Well, you know, I should correct that. I do want to hear your pee-pee poo-poo problems. I do. I just want to hear them live on air. I want you to send me your emails with your cat won't tolerate brushing or won't let you trim its nails or won't let you clean its ears or doesn't like your new dog or your cat won't use the litter box. You can always send me that. That's probably 70% of the cat emails I get. So you can join the group, and I'll forward it on to Dusty as well. But if you've got an interesting cat problem or a why question, like why does my cat do this? Why does my dog do this? Or you maybe have a dog problem. I just can't get my dog to heal, or my dog won't stop chasing my rabbit, or I don't know, anything at all. Send it to me and I'll solve it on the air. If you need a veterinarian, I'll bring one along and he'll solve it, or she'll solve it for you. We've got Dr. Carol and Dr. Kevin, and one of them will come on and fix the problem. So send it to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Dog Radio. And in the meantime, if you want to get a look at my puppies, they're on Facebook, Camp Good Dog, or you can go to my website. You can find me at debwolf.ca. Thanks, everybody. And
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that.
Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Dog Radio, and I believe we have Dusty Rainbold on the line. Welcome to the show, Dusty. Oh, we do not have Dusty Rainbold on the line. Okay, I did not know that. Hopefully we'll reach her soon. Otherwise, we'll be doing one segment where I come up with something to talk to you about. You know, I was thinking of the topic of trophic cascade. I know that's a little bit outside the pet area, but not really. Not really when you think about it, because it has to do with animals and it has to do with what happens when you take out one member. Sometimes it's easy to kind of villainize a particular animal. So we look at the ranches and we sympathize with the ranchers and their dead animals, or we look at the deer in the Bambi movie and we feel so sorry for them. And we think, aha, we'll kill the wolf. We'll get a wolf trade going and wolf pelts and we'll deal with this. And then we won't have missing chickens and all this going on. But actually, that's not what happens. What happened in Yosemite is after a 70-year absence of the wolves, the vegetation was hit hard, because certain animals that wolves eat got out of control. Not only did they get out of control in population numbers and their impact on what they ate, decimating the plant life, but they also only ate certain kinds of plants. So it was a very specific kind of decimation. And because they weren't being hunted in certain areas or any areas, they expanded their area. They expanded their territory. So really, Yosemite was in trouble. Yosemite was going to be irrevocably changed. But not only that, and that's something we've known about a long time, the newest thing we figured out was that, and this is kind of tricky, it sort of takes a little understanding, but they actually change the waters, the rivers, the flow of the land. They don't just change the animals. So by having the wolves eating the deer and keeping the deer only where they're in the most safe places, what happens is the vegetation grows up and it holds the river in place. It holds the bank and it succeeds and survives. When they kill them all, the river has no support and it meanders way more and there's way more erosion. It destabilizes the banks and the soil and the forests, and the entire ecosystem becomes transformed. So that's what they're talking about when they talk about restoring a predator like a wolf. They're talking about recovering vegetation and recovering other animals, because sometimes one of the prey animals gets out of hand at the expense of the others. So in this case, the songbirds were missing, the beavers were missing, all the things that happen when you get good vegetation were leaving. The rabbits, the coyotes, all of these things, the birds of prey were missing. So now they're all back. And yes, the ranchers do have to deal with wolf kill sometimes, but most of the time the wolves are eating other things. They're eating rats and rabbits and deer, mostly. So that's trophic cascade, if you're ever wondering about that and why taking out one predator affects so many so much. There was also something recently on the news. They were talking once again, and I If I'd known I was going to be live on Air Solo, I would have taken better notes on it. But they were talking once again about a man who was tormenting these women in these town and in this town, and he'd been arrested, and there was a hearing, and they were hearing from all these different women and how long it had gone on. And it just struck me because they were doing interview after interview and commentary after commentary. And at one point, they just casually referred to the fact that this guy, this person they were talking about, had once set a cat on fire. And then they had his ex-wife on, talking about how she was not very reputable. It was very hard to know if she was credible at all. But she was saying how when she went to jail, he took care of her cat and he set it on fire, she believed, which was supposedly the second time. The first time he was actually arrested, charged, convicted for setting a cat on fire. And the whole thing just made me realize, you know what? If you've got a kid in your house that's acting out against animals in any way, I've gone over this before, and I read out a mental health statement from Canadian Mental Health about this, but basically, to summarize, if you have a kid that's doing anything bad to animals, pulling wings off insects, cornering them, any kind of animal, it doesn't have to be a dog or a cat, but specifically dogs and cats especially, if they're cornering kittens, puppies, dogs, or cats, if they're securing them when they shouldn't, if they're causing them pain, scaring them, if they're too rough with them, if any of these things are going on, you need to call someone. You need to talk to your school counselor. You need to talk to your physician. You need to get that kid some help, because it's probably not going to end there. They've done so many studies and so many tests, and they found over and over and over that if you let that start, it extends. So first it's bugs, and then it's animals, and then it's kids, and then it's people. So instead, just nip it in the bud and get on it. Treat it like the serious problem that it is. And you can get over it. You can teach kids sympathy and empathy and caring and compassion. And it starts with the little creatures. It starts by supervising them when they hold little animals and little critters and teaching them how to do it properly. Not every kid is born with an innate understanding. A lot of times, if a kid doesn't know how to pet and touch an animal and hasn't been shown, then they'll just look for a reaction. And if that continues and they never really get a close relationship with an animal, they just only have these sort of far contacts. When they do get close, they'll do things like step on the little dog's toe, just to hear it go, yip. They're not actually intentionally causing cruelty. The connection for them hasn't been made yet. So when that's starting, you got to get intervene and say, how would you like it if someone stepped on your toe? This is how it would feel. Step on your own toe, Johnny. Do you see how it feels? It's not nice, is it? You know, and that kind of a thing. So you have to get in there right away. Don't just think, oh, boys will be boys. He'll outgrow it. She'll outgrow it. It's only a bumblebee. It won't matter. The dog is big enough. He can handle himself. That's the worst idea. Because a kid like that is very likely to get bit somewhere, somehow, sometime. If your kid learns to deal with animals so that all animals love him, then he won't be one of the many, many boys, and yep, I'm saying boys, age 8 to 12, most likely person in America to get bit seriously by a dog right now is a child age 8 to 12. It's not a robber, it's not a stranger, it's not an abuser, it's a boy. It's a boy who's acting in a way that doesn't jive well with dogs, in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong thing, somehow behaving in a way that makes him a target. Now, the dog's at fault, absolutely. But don't you want your kid to know how to handle dogs so he's not the kid that the loose dog goes off on? Don't you want your kid to know not to jump in over a fence into a fenced yard with a dog, or cut across doing a shortcut where there's a barking dog saying, get out of here, I don't want you here? You want your kid to be able to know all these things and respect animals and to be the kind of kid that just gets it. So start now, because that's what happens to little boys who don't get along with animals. They do get into trouble along the way. As far as fear, that's a whole other thing. If you've got a child that's afraid, then you really want to get them with dogs and cats right away. Start with something really small, Like the puppies I have, they've just, you know, they're 8 weeks old, they're 6 weeks old. They're just starting to eat and run around. You take one at a time, you go see a breeder, you have your kids sit there and hold the puppy, and you gently pass the puppy back and forth, or you hold the puppy and he pets it, and then you let him hold. If you've got a little girl who's been taught by someone to squeal and run when she sees a dog, that's prey flight. That will cause dogs to chase her. Again, teach her, that's not the way to behave. Teach her how to calmly deal with dogs and cats. Well, I've just found out Dusty can't join us. So I'll wrap up this topic and then I'll finish up for the day. And we'll come back with Dusty in the future talking about cat topics. But if you've got a kid who runs away from animals, you have a kid who's likely to be chased by dogs. So you got to change that. You've got to get your child to understand that most dogs mean them no harm, how to recognize the signs of a relaxed dog, how to deal with dogs. If they really want to avoid a dog, how to quietly, without a lot of attention and noise, calmly walk away. And you know, better yet, get them exposed, like I was saying. Get them around a little puppy, then gradually work up to old dog on a leash. And then get your kid to walk the old dog on a leash. You know, you need some volunteers in the neighborhood for this, or you might need to go to a shelter and talk to them for this. But there are going to be dogs that need walking at the shelter or at the vet clinic. There are going to be opportunities for you to get your kid who's afraid of dogs or cats to be hands-on in a controlled, calm setting with a pet who's going to be just easy to handle and sweet and responsive. And that's what you need. Get them over this before they become part of the problem in the future. I used to run dog training classes in Vancouver, and one time I had a Down syndrome kid come to class, and she had a dog of her own who was an untrained puppy, but she was more coming to class because she was so reactive. And her parents had the good sense to think that, you know what, it's not, she has a great attitude. She loves dogs, but she runs up to them, strange dogs, dogs she doesn't know, and they react badly. And they could see that this was going to be a problem someday. So they put her in a puppy class with their puppy. And we worked and worked and worked and worked till the dogs were really used to her. But even more importantly, she was used to dogs. So wherever she goes now, she loves dogs. She approaches dogs. But she does it in a way that doesn't get her reacted to badly. And actually, I've heard from her over the years. She's doing just fine. Just fine as an adult. And she volunteers at the SPCA. So that one makes me really happy. Okay, everyone. We're going to finish up for today. If you want to see my puppies, they're on Camp Good Dog Facebook. And, well, you can see the chickens and the goats and the dogs and the cats and the kids and everything going on at Camp Good Dog. My boarding kennel up here in Vancouver, British Columbia. Or you can check me out at dubwolf.ca, dubwolf.net, or dubwolf online, dubwolfonline.com. It's all coming together soon. But mostly you can check me out here at Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, where I am every week. And next week I hope to get Dusty. I want to tell her about the great success I had with an elderly cat who all of a sudden stopped using the litter box and started using the teenage boy's bed. Yes, this is not what you want. Teenagers have it hard enough. Oh, yeah, try to get your kid to make your bed in the morning. Try to get a teenager to make his bed in the morning when there's cat poop on it. Good luck on that one. So I had a customer calling complaining about this, and I couldn't reach Dusty, and I decided to solve it with some of her old advice, and it worked. We got the cat using the litter box again, and actually it was really, really simple. I made a vet appointment, or I got them to make a vet appointment, and the problem was solved before the vet appointment. So it wasn't medical. It was behavioral. But if you ever do have a cat that all of a sudden changes its behavior, you do want to take it to the vet to figure out if it's medical before you start assuming, and never punish a cat for being in the wrong place or you'll get more of it and more creative. So avoid that one. All right. Until next week, be good to your animals. We'll be back on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with more guests and more news and more animal moments from me, Deb Wolf. Be good to your animals. And anytime you're near.